Mr. President, Commissioner, my name is Fiona Kerr. I'm the legal officer at the Anti-Discrimination Board of New South Wales. And the board and the president of the board, Mr. Kirkasharian, would like to thank the commission very much for this opportunity, both to contribute to the inquiry and to appear here this afternoon to talk to our submission. A little by way of background, the Anti-Discrimination Board was established in 1977 to administer the Anti-Discrimination Act, which I'll refer to as either the Act or the ADA, shorthand the ADA. Now, the ADB's functions include investigating and conciliating complaints of discrimination, harassment and vilification, informing and educating the people of New South Wales, employers and service providers about their rights and responsibilities under anti-discrimination law in the state, and recommending legislative and policy reform to maximise the protection of human rights and the effectiveness of anti-discrimination laws. Just briefly to outline the way in which the Anti-Discrimination Act works, is we cover grounds and areas. There are certain grounds under the Act on personal characteristics, on the ground of which it's unlawful to discriminate, providing that discrimination is happening in certain defined areas of public life, and it's very similar to the way in which the federal legislation and most of the state legislation works as well. The ADB, the president of the ADB or his delegated officers have the power to investigate and conciliate complaints. The board has no power to make findings, merely to bring the parties together in the hope that they themselves can reach an outcome, and we're very pleased to be able to say something like 90% of our complaints do manage to settle without parties having to take the litigation road, which is by way of a hearing in the Administrative Decisions Tribunal in New South Wales. The submission that we've provided to the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission is based on previous work done by the board, and I must acknowledge the work of the previous legal and policy branch of the board. We're a much leaner, meaner machine these days, but fortunately the former legal and policy branch was able to do quite a lot of work, principally for the New South Wales Law Reform Commission review of the Property Relationships Act, and I'll refer to that as the PRA in the future. What the PRA does, and I'm sure you've already heard quite a lot today about it, is it provides a framework for division of property for same-sex de facto couples and others in close personal relationships. Now, the PRA extended the ambit of the old De Facto Relationships Act in New South Wales. It did so in a couple of ways, by introducing a new category of relationship, domestic relationships, defined as either a de facto relationship or as a close personal relationship other than a marriage or a de facto relationship between two adult persons, whether or not related by family, who are living together, one or each of whom provides the other with domestic support and personal care. I think significantly the PRA redefined the term de facto relationship, and it amended a number of New South Wales Acts to bring them into line with the new definition of de facto relationship. It did that by inserting into 21 New South Wales pieces of legislation acts which referred to spouse, the definition in the PRA, so that spouse in the amending act was inclusive of the PRA definition of de facto. In his second reading speech, the then New South Wales Attorney General, the Honourable Jeff Shaw QC, said, "This definition of de facto relationship is designed to be clearly inclusive of those living together as homosexual couples." Now, the effect of the amendments was to extend de facto rights and obligations to people in same-sex de facto relationships in areas such as inheritance, decision-making when incapacitated and after death, compensation and stamp duty. Now, while those amendments were perhaps long overdue, the reality was that the PRA, or as it was then, the De Facto Relationships Act, had been in force for some 15 years, and in those 15 years, the issues surrounding the recognition of marriage-like relationships or personal partnerships hadn't been reviewed, despite the fact that socially this was, I think we'll agree, a period of quite marked social change. Now, subsequently that same year, the New South Wales Law Reform Commission was asked to review the matter. That resulted in, I'm sure you've already heard, discussion paper 44, and I understand the Law Reform Commission spoke to that earlier today. And I note that the Law Reform Commission estimated that some 120 acts in New South Wales refer to the spouse, and many of those have already been identified. And it was in that context that the ADB reviewed the existing legislation in New South Wales with a view to the adequacy of the recognition of a number of non-traditional domestic relationships, and in particular the recognition of lesbian and gay relationships. And that research is the basis of our submission to the Commission. I guess to continue the legislative story in New South Wales, the Miscellaneous Acts Amendment Relationships Act of 2002, the Amending Act, commenced on the 1st of November 2002. It's often referred to as the Missing Pieces legislation. It amended a further 24 New South Wales statutes, including many previously identified by the Board as requiring reform. The acts amended by the Amending Act were those identified as conferring employment benefits and entitlements. Now, in its submission to the Law Reform Commission, the ADB identified a number of New South Wales Acts not scheduled for amendment by the Missing Pieces legislation, but which, in the Board's view, should be amended to be consistent with the stated purpose of the Missing Pieces legislation, that is, to address laws which discriminate against gay and lesbian couples compared with their heterosexual counterparts. And at Annex C of our submission is the list that the ADB has compiled of what we consider to be important acts that still remain for reform in New South Wales. I briefly want to consider what those acts are, what they might mean. I guess the first one that I'd like to talk about is our own act, the Anti-Discrimination Act. We're in the somewhat anomalous position that homosexual couples are not directly protected by the Anti-Discrimination Act, and the Board's position is that they should be. Part 4 of the Anti-Discrimination Act deals with discrimination on the ground of marital status. Under the Act, it's unlawful to discriminate against a person because of their marital status in five defined areas of public life. Section 4 of the Act defines what comprises marital status, and it means the status or condition of being either single, married, married but living separately and apart from one's spouse, divorced, widowed, or in cohabitation otherwise than in marriage with a person of the opposite sex. Now, that's clear from that definition that there's no provision for discrimination on the basis of marital or relationship status for same-sex couples. Effectively, then, a person who's a member of a same-sex couple and who's discriminated against on the ground of that status is denied the protection of the Anti-Discrimination Act. And fundamentally, the Board's of the view that that's an anomalous situation in New South Wales. The ADA prescribes discrimination on the ground of homosexuality, but it defines marital status in a way that excludes same-sex couples. Now, note that the Law Reform Commission, in its review of the Anti-Discrimination Act, that was Report 92, recommended that the ADA be extended to cover homosexual relationships, and it considered that in light of the Commonwealth Marriage Act, a preferable term would be domestic status. So Part 4 of the Anti-Discrimination Act, discrimination on the ground of marital status, would become discrimination on the ground of domestic status. The Law Reform Commission recommended that the definition of domestic status be expanded so that the ground includes being in cohabitation with another person in a domestic relationship other than in marriage, and the Board's of the view that that would encapsulate people living in a same-sex homosexual relationship. Now, when the issue was raised with the Attorney General following the passage of the Amending Act, he indicated that the recommendation of the Law Reform Commission was on the government's agenda. To date, that recommendation hasn't been acted on. I'd also just like to briefly flag Section 54 of the ADA, and that has been referred to apart from anything else in the PAC submission. That is the general exemption or exception, the statutory exception in the Act, for acts done to comply with another Act. Although it was intended initially to be a temporary measure, and despite reviews and submissions by the ADB over the year, Section 54 remains, although albeit in a more narrow form than originally enacted. In its review of the ADA, the Law Reform Commission noted that many submissions to it, including that of the Board, expressed concern at the breadth of the exception and the status which it accords anti-discrimination legislation in the overall framework of legislative regulation. In particular, there were concerns that the generality of that exception undermined the integrity of the Anti-Discrimination Act. Now, the equivalent provision was considered by the High Court in Waters and the Public Transport Corporation. In that case, the Court adopted a very narrow interpretation, which didn't provide protection for the exercise of discretionary powers by way of ministerial directives, which didn't constitute formal instruments made under an Act. The Anti-Discrimination, the Administrative Decisions Tribunal, rather, in New South Wales, recently took a similar view in Sydney University Postgraduate Representative Association, SUPRA, and others, and the Minister for Transport Services and others, and that's a 2006 case. The tribunal there found that the Minister could not use his or her discretionary powers under one Act to circumvent the obligations placed on service providers by the Anti-Discrimination Act. Now, considering similar provisions in other jurisdictions, as I say, the Law Reform Commission has recommended the repeal of Section 54 in its current form. However, that section remains with us in the Anti-Discrimination Act to date.
Is that super case on appeal, or still able to be appealed?
I understand that it is on appeal, Commissioner, on appeal. Yes. I'd just briefly like to run through perhaps a couple of the other acts that the Board has identified as being, if we like, ripe for reform in the context of this discussion. The Public Authority Superannuation Act, it defines spouse in relation to a deceased contributor in a way which only refers to people of the opposite sex. I'm unable to provide any further information about what status the Public Authority Superannuation Act has. However, information available to the Board indicates that a number of New South Wales Acts in the area of public sector superannuation were inadvertently not included when the Superannuation Legislation Amendments Same-Sex Partners Act 2000 was passed. A number of older acts concerned with public sector superannuation schemes apparently didn't require amendment, as they were subsumed under the State Authority's Superannuation Scheme. Clearly, private sector superannuation is a separate issue which the Board understands the Law Reform Commission may be looking at. Also unamended is the Coal and Oil Shale Mine Workers Superannuation Act of 1941. It defines spouse in relation to a mine worker as a person of the opposite sex with whom the mine worker is living as the mine worker's spouse on a bona fide domestic basis. The Industrial Relations Act, this Act has been amended. The amending Act, however, didn't address the exclusion of non-biological same-sex parents from the entitlements to unpaid parental leave. That's Section 54. Mm-hmm. Now, parental leave is defined in such a way as to exclude non-biological same-sex parents. Parental leave may be maternity leave, that is, leave for a pregnant woman immediately before or after the birth of her child, and paternity leave is taken in connection with the birth of his or her spouse's, of his or spouse's child. That's Section 55. It may also include adoption leave, where an employee adopts a child under five, other than a child who has previously lived continuously with the employee. As only single gay or lesbian persons can adopt, this will obviously exclude the non-recognised partner. Now, excuse me. The Board understands that to fully extend the parental leave provisions to same-sex partners would require extensive legislative redesign of the Industrial Relations Act, that it's simply not a matter of inserting into the Industrial Relations Act the PRA definition of de facto relationship in provisions relating to parental leave. Obviously, that's a matter that perhaps may be taken up with the Minister of Industrial Relations. Just briefly, the Adoption Act, I think some of the other contributors to this inquiry has noted that the Adoption Act 2000 allows adoption by single people or a couple, defined in the Act as a man and a woman who are married or have a de facto relationship. Same-sex couples are not permitted to jointly adopt a child. The Status of Children Act, again, that enshrines the right of ex-nuptial children to be treated the same as children born within a marriage for legal purposes, including in relation to dispositions of property. However, the Status of Children Act doesn't ensure that all ex-nuptial children are treated the same as children born within a marriage, where an ex-nuptial child is conceived using fertilisation procedures and born, for example, to lesbian parents. The presumptions in Section 14 ensure that children conceived through fertilisation procedures don't suffer any legal disadvantage or social stigma by ensuring they have the same status under New South Wales law as other children. However, it doesn't provide the same status for children born to a lesbian couple. The Human Tissue Act of 1984, that has been amended to include same-sex partners when giving rights to spouses and considering partners to be the next of kin. However, the Act may not recognise some same-sex co-parents as senior next of kin for child-parent relationships, and in the absence of the biological parent, the same-sex co-parent would not be recognised as next of kin. Two further acts, the Local Government Act and the Rural Lands Protection Act, they both have more restrictive definitions of either de facto partner or spouse. The Board understands that the effect of amending those two acts to include same-sex relationships as per the PRA definition, would in effect impose an obligation to disclose a same-sex relationship, and those acts may not be suitable for amendment until the Anti-Discrimination Act, for example, is amended to give protection to people on the ground of same-sex relationship. Two final acts identified by the board: the Property Relationships Act, again a perhaps anomalous situation. Sections 4 and 5 redefine the terms de facto and domestic relationship to include same-sex relationships for the purposes of this Act. It doesn't amend the definition of de facto in other legislation unless otherwise specifically stated. Similarly, the Act also doesn't change the way in which the word spouse is construed at law. Consequently, numerous statutes which discriminate against gay men and lesbians by failing to include their relationship within the definition of de facto continue unamended. And I'll also just finally note that the Workplace Injury Management and Workers' Compensation Act of 1998 defines de facto relationship as a relationship between two unrelated adult persons who have a mutual commitment to a shared life and whose relationship is genuine and continuing, and who live together but who are not married to one another. Now, as outlined in the body of our submission, that definition may not encompass same-sex relationships where, for a number of reasons, the partners don't live together on a full-time basis. And I think, as some of the other submissions here have noted, it's not necessarily true for all same-sex couples that they will live together on a full-time basis. Mr. President, I think that's about it as far as a little trawl through our submission highlights. Yeah. I'm happy to address any questions.
Well, that was very helpful, thank you, and particularly the latter part of your submission, which indicates, I think, some reasons why these remaining acts were not picked up. Simple change of definition, which was in the PRA. We had the benefit this morning of the New South Wales Law Reform Commission that promised us things to come but couldn't tell us what they were going to be at this stage. I haven't had any questions, actually.
I wanted to ask about your submission contains statistics about the number of inquiries and complaints regarding discrimination on the basis of homosexuality and marital status.
Yes.
Can you provide any examples of those of such complaints? Or is there somewhere in your annual reports or somewhere similar where we might find such examples?
Yes, I think those examples will be found in the annual reports. Unfortunately, we have what can only be referred to as a very antiquated database, which is only able to provide quantitative information rather than qualitative. So it's quite an exercise to actually extract that information. That would have to be gained from individual complaint files. Mm. But there are some de-identified examples in the board's annual reports of situations where people have been able to access the provisions of the Anti-Discrimination Act. I do have a couple of updated figures in relation to, and these figures are subject to integrity checking, but at this stage for the 2005-2006 year, the complaints lodged with the board on the ground of homosexuality or presumed homosexuality, which is also covered by the ADA, 27, and that's down from a high in the year 2002-2003 of 61, and I think we've been gradually seeing a decrease, and I'm not sure whether that's, I guess, a couple of possibilities. Either homosexual people are perhaps discouraged by the fact that there is still so much discrimination against them, or perhaps we're just getting a whole lot better. I'm not sure. Mm. I know what I'd prefer to believe, but...
Yeah. Are you able to... not now, but at a later stage, refers to the de-identified examples in your annual reports.
I can provide you with a copy of last year's annual report, and I'm sure I can extract those examples. Yes,
that would be helpful.
Yes.
Thank you.
You gave us the updated figures for grounds of homosexuality. Do you have them for marital status?
Yes, I do have an updated figure for the ground of marital status, and that figure for years. And again, this is raw data, subject to integrity checking. For 2005-2006, the complaints received by the board on the ground of marital status, number 9. And I just want to refer briefly to the provisions of marital status. As I noted earlier, marital status does not include in the Anti-Discrimination Act people who live on a bona fide domestic basis with people of the same sex. And the particular situation was dealt with in Wilson and another versus Qantas Airways in 1985 case. That was argued as direct discrimination on the ground of both marital status and homosexuality. It was declined by the Administrative Decisions Tribunal on the basis that marital status was not inclusive of same-sex relationships. Interesting to note, however, that it was only argued on the basis of direct discrimination. I think there's an argument that if the same set of circumstances were presented today, if it was argued on the basis of indirect discrimination on the basis of homosexuality, I think perhaps that might have a different result.
It's interesting that both those complaint numbers are dropping.
Yes, indeed it is interesting. I don't have any explanation for that.
Ms. Gerd, in your... I'm sorry if I missed it. In your going through the Acts, did you mention the Public Authority Superannuation Act?
Yes, I did. Unfortunately, I'm... This is not an act I'm familiar with in terms of what its status is or how it actually works along with the other superannuation acts in New South Wales. It defines spouse in relation to a deceased contributor as basically in relation to a person of the opposite sex.
Yes.
Now,
I just wondered if there was any process by which a person in a same-sex relationship may be able to access their partner's superannuation that you're aware
I'm
of.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, I don't have any information about that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I think you've covered my... Did you talk about the Workplace Injury Management and Workers' Compensation Act?
Yes, I did.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, okay.
It has a fairly broad definition of de facto relationship.
That's right, because you talked about the couples not living.
That's right.
Yes,
the problem is for same-sex couples who perhaps choose, for a number of reasons, perhaps not to live together, they will be excluded from that. And that is perhaps a bit of a gap in that legislation.
Sure. No, thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for coming along.